Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everyone. Thank God it's Friday. My favorite saying in the whole wide world. I hope everyone's doing well. I hope you all had a great week. And I hope you all have a better weekend to follow. Here it's rainy and miserable. But you know what? It's still the weekend. So that makes it better. And hello, Rex. How are you tonight?
Hello, hello, hello. It's raining here, too.
Is it? It's been nasty here all day. It's supposed to be this way all day tomorrow, too. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at as well.
Yeah, yeah. So how are you tonight? You doing all right?
Excellent. What's going on?
You know, not a damn thing. Not a damn thing. Looks like we have a nice full board for tonight. Probably another eclectic mix, which we all like, right? So.
Absolutely.
That's why we do open poetry, you know, on some nights. But it's going all right. It's going all right. We have two callers already. Life is good, right? That's the way I look at it.
Cool.
We have, first off, we have Weaver of Dreams. So hello, Kate, and welcome aboard.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me, and I hope you can hear me.
Hello, Kate.
Hello, my darling.
Absolutely. And then we have Pam on the line. So hello, Pam.
Hi, Phil. Hi, Rex. Hi, Kate.
Hey, Pam.
Good to hear you all.
Hi, Pam.
Welcome. Yeah, it's good to have you guys here. We have a decent lineup for poetry. We have a pretty nice full board, I think. I don't think we have too many short ones in there, but you never know. And if we do, well, we'll figure it out. That's the way it works. I hope everybody had a good week. How's it going for you, Weaver? How's your weather holding out?
Well, it's very changeable in Scotland. It's generally pretty horrible, sometimes more horrible, sometimes less horrible. But
that about sums that up.
Yep.
If I recall, I think I heard you guys have a lot of rainy weather. Is that correct?
We certainly do, yes. But that's probably why it's all green and lush and wonderful and all that rubbish. I'd rather have the sun.
It is beautiful, I have to say. I watched some crazy guy on Facebook who trims cow's hooves, and he's from Scotland, so that's how I know how pretty it is, and that's how I know how much it rains. See?
You'll find it. But we don't mind. As an ex-biker, my theory has always been there's no such thing as bad weather, just the wrong clothes.
There you go.
I
mean, I'm an honest believer that, you know, if people really are unhappy with where their weather is or what their weather is, they'll move, you know, to warmer weather or drier weather or whatever. You know, because people become acclimated and they learn to, adapt and overcome. So there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, but it is beautiful that every picture you see, it's prettier than the one before.
Yeah, I love the Highlands.
I guess I'll be sleep for that. Don't you worry. The islands, I've seen a couple of pictures of that. I'll surprise you. I have something on my sleeve about all that. Right, Pam? Pam's pretty.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it'll be good. And now we have another caller because we talked long enough. So I'm going to welcome Laurent to the party. Hello, Laurent. How are you?
Good evening. Doing fine. Thank you.
Hello, hey, Laurent.
Hey, Rex.
Pretty soon we're going to have to start getting new chairs. More chairs.
There you go.
Works for me. It's been a long time. How's your weather up there, Laurent? Is it raining there? And Pam, how about you? Is it snowing? I'm only kidding.
No. Actually, today was that what I call that perfect weather, like right around 70, sun shining, a slight breeze. I actually went for a 3-mile walk with my daughter and one of the dogs. And it was just really nice. So I have to say I'm actually very happy right now. I know it won't last, but right now I'm very happy with the weather.
That was your spring. Tomorrow might be your summer, and then you're back to fall and winter again.
Exactly.
but I'm glad you had a nice day. I'm kind of jealous. They're the days I love when they're like that. Just around 70, a little breezy. That's the best. That is the best. You know, 70s and balmy, I usually refer to it as. Laurent, did you have rain today? Or were you dry?
Dry.
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 This is good. I think I'm a little jealous of that, too. So, it's the way it goes. It's okay. Rex and I will just watch the flowers grow or something. I don't know. In the rain. it's April showers bring May flowers, so what the hell is this, right? Oh, my gosh. So, I know what everybody's weather is, y'all wanted to talk about that. Anything exciting? I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff. Faziana and I began the process of putting some of our audios into our YouTube channel. I know I have a topic board up in the room asking anyone who's willing to allow their audios to be placed there to sign up. I have tons of audios that I've saved from all the shows, and what I'm going to do is once they're up on the YouTube channel, I think I'm going to finally get to delete them from my computer. And anyone who does not want their work done, I'll delete it from my computer as well. So it'll just be easier. And Frank was kind enough to get that ball rolling. So heaven knows we got a lot on there already. Well, they're not actually up on there yet. I don't want to look. But we have a lot to work with. So hopefully we'll have a little something to show for it soon. And you can all decide what you want to do. And that was my big news for the day. I probably should have kept my mask right until I got it a little further ahead. But, you know, sometimes I just have to say things. I don't want anybody to think we're just sitting here doing nothing. God forbid. God forbid we should do nothing here. Okay, well, I guess that I should get the party started, I think. I'm not positive, but I think it would be a good idea. So I think I'm going to start here and put this up for Rex to kick us off. And we'll see where it goes from there. Okay, Rex, here we go.
All right. Immortality by Dan DeShino. I stand with bones immortal, constant motion between the stars within to power each thought, each step, a push on the ground to turn this hamster wheel world. And when I run from hell, it goes faster, and the inevitable ocean sweat from every pore falls from my brow, and the salt stings deep in my eyes. Now, just fatal wounds. And those bones that are everywhere sing ancient and rhyming, a soliloquy or a requiem, a symphony, either way. True roots weigh heavy on my chest, pulsating a rhythm of early life, and each leaf's breath CPR for another moment. And those bones which continue to hold me up so I can take that next breath have traveled through all time and now to its edge. And they look back through the cosmos to find but just a simple story and look forward blindly into the darkness for a glimmer of hope. And poem.
Nice read, Rex.
All right,
nice
Pam,
read.
Why don't you kick us off?
Wow, that was really quick. I feel like there was a like 1 second pause between end poem and hey, Pam. All right. Well, this is just a stand-up piece, and that you did an excellent read of that, Rex. All the way through, this is an amazing write, but parts that really stood out to me were, first of all, and when I run from hell, it goes no faster, and the inevitable ocean sweat from every pore falls from my brow. I like that idea there of, you know, when you try to run away from your problems, and you can't escape them. Also, the tree roots weigh heavy on my chest, pulsing a rhythm of early life, and each leaf's breath CPR for another moment. I feel like because it's the mention of the tree roots, that to me that speaks of our past, whether it's our own personal past or a family past. You know, there's this real weight, this feeling of trying to escape, of being weighed down, and wanting to travel beyond that. And I do really appreciate how within the darkness of this rite at the very end, as he says, and look forward blindly into the darkness for a glimmer of hope. There's that, you know, I think when you're looking for hope, it's because you know somehow it's out there and you just have to keep searching. So excellent rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
In the first stanza, when Daniel says, I stand with bones immortal, constant motion between the stars within to power each thought, he could very well be speaking for every person who's ever really lived, because it is only through the constant the journey of humanity that we are mortal, I think. And the next stanza, and this particular stanza, and those bones which continue to hold me up so I can take that next breath. I've traveled through all time and now to its edge. As he has made a personal journey, again, I think so has man. Life is hard. but we persevere, and not the least tool that we use as we look forward blindly into the darkness is indeed that glimmer of hope in the last stanza. Well done, Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Great thoughts, Laurent. Thank you. And Kate, how about you?
Very, very powerful. Immortality, just for a title, that's a beautiful title. I like so much, and those birds that are everywhere sing ancient and rhyming, a soliloquy or a requiem, a symphony either way. That's just very, very lovely. Then we have the tree roots weighing heavily on my chest. Each leaf's breath, CPR for another moment. So yes, I agree that this can be one man's journey, or it can be mankind's striving forward, always looking forward. Looking back, perhaps not a very good idea, but looking forward definitely. But blindly into the darkness for a glimmer of hope does sound a little bit sad, doesn't it? Well, I hope that that bit of light is there. There's light at the end of the tunnel. Let's hope it's not an oncoming train. But I enjoyed it.
Remember, you got to look backwards to see where you've been.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really beautiful, I mean, beautiful work. Every word, I think. I had read it earlier, and I just thought, oh, that's just amazing. So, yes, I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Kate. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I think this was a really wonderful piece by Dan. And I am kind of, I do kind of like his work very much, you know, just saying. And it was funny because I picked a couple stanzas and everybody, like, plucked them. But that's okay because I still want it on my sleeve. You know, I could have picked any one of them and been just as happy. But this one is, and those bones which continue to hold me up so I can take that next breath have traveled through all time and now to its edge. But what great thoughts there. And imagery, wonderful imagery. You know, and those bones, I mean, you can imagine, well, I imagine like a skeleton. But in some of these, you know, where it says about this, the stars within or the, yeah, it was the stars within. I just picture this open skeleton with nothing but stars and dark sky and all that inside of it, incorporated into it. It all becomes one, you know. And to me, that's good. It's good stuff. But nicely done, Dan, and very, very great piece. Great piece. Definitely touching. Not touching, but, you know, tough. You know. You know what I mean. Anyway, it's wonderful.
Great comments, everyone. Yeah, I got to say that hamster wheel stanza had that hit on that notion of how hard life is and how nothing turns in a moment's revolution. It takes sometimes decades or centuries or even thousands of years for some things to make their next revolution into that which it's supposed to be. The birds that are everywhere sing ancient and rhyming, a soliloquy or requiem, a symphony, either way. I hit on the notion, hey, if we don't have doomsayers, we've got them saying that Jesus is coming back to earth. So it's one way or the other. Either way, the song is a symphony, and they kind of walk on the same notes. The tree roots, the heavy weights on my chest, that could be a call to life with family, or how family, you have to make adjustments because it's never always on the same point, or even heartwarming at times. And yes, as everybody hit up, everybody does look forward to a little glimmer of hope, even though we might not find it in the moment now. All right, Jane, we're coming back to you.
Okie dokie. Okay, I'm going to read the next one. Don't get laughing either. I'm going to grab the next one, and that's by Lori West. And this is called Feeling the Love by Lori West. Feeling your love when you're gone. My body loves you still, as it has. Began to love naked, and as I stand. With love in my mind, where do we go from here? You made me love you. I will wait for you again. End poem. Mm-hmm.
Bravery, Jean. Thank you very much. All right, Kate, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, of course. This is just, I like anything about love. I do like it a lot. Feeling your love when you're gone. My body loves you still as it has. This is a story about loss. You made me love you and I will wait for you again. So yes, it's very, very touching. Somebody's put an awful lot of thought into this. There's an awful lot of somebody's love gone into this, and it's really, really a very, very beautiful piece of work. It's kind of touched me a little bit because I've the idea of here you made me love you, I will wait for you again. It's just a, it's sad. So, sorry, that's all I can say. I think it was beautiful, and thank you.
Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, I see the persistence of a lover who, once having achieved his aims, departed either voluntarily or involuntarily. But more than that, I see a woman sitting perhaps at her boudoir desk, in tears, thinking of her lost love, and perhaps he's alive and she's going to write him a note, and she pens those words quickly and then either puts it back in a drawer or rips it up or stares at it.
Excellent. Thank you, Long. All right, Pam, how about you?
Well, this is a wonderful brevity. I have to say that I think Kate really summed it up nicely when she said it's about love and loss, because it truly is. But, you know, the two parts that stood out to me the most are, you know, I'm sorry, naked as I stand, because it can mean being physically naked, but there's also this idea of just being vulnerable. And the question, where do we go from here? You know, it's that, again, another vulnerable moment. And I think the vulnerability within those lines really has an emotional impact. So very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. All right, Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was a great brevity, and it was nicely penned. I enjoyed the imagery, but I think that it really reflected a strong devotion to someone, and that's kind of what I like the best. So nice job, Lori, and thanks for sharing with us.
Great comments, everybody. I can't disagree with anything, and that last line does kind of hint on a sad note in that they have to wait for that return angle or maybe meet again in another life, so... Wonderfully done, Lori. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, it's back to you.
Okie dokie. Well, let's see now. Miss Kate, can I get you to read the next one for me, please? Okay. Set out. Well, maybe she's not on the line anymore. Although I saw
you're on mute, Kate.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on mute again. I do apologize. Oh, dear. What a plonker. Anyway, I got it now. Sonnet of Love. Oh, I must remember to press that little button. You have to bear with me. I think my system is playing silly beggars with me again. It keeps on slowing down, and it won't open anything up. Oh, I'm so sorry. I've got this little line creeping across the top of my screen, and it's...
Oh, yes.
You see that one? I've got it. Yay. Got it. Right. Thank you. Sorry for the delay, folks. Okay. I love you beyond skin and bone, wrapped tight, knitted through darkness, our love the needle, single-stitched around the corners of trust, lust, and bits of love through diversions of loss. Where none others can see the writing, script of lovemaking from deep in the shadows, When you breathe, it's I that fills up with life. It's a moment when lips meet and hearts beat. I love you in and out of life's journeys, the fiery waters, the monstrous exiles, to moments where your hands become my own and intimate dances require no touch. There is no you or I, but us in love. I love you beneath depths of a warm skin. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
The metaphorical needle in the first stanza really is very well done. I love you beyond skin and bone, wrapped tight, knitted through darkness. Our love, the needle. The way she speaks of her love, I love you in and out of life's journeys, the fiery waters, the monstrous exiles. All of that she can wade through to reach the moment when your hands become my own and intimate dances require no touch. The bond that exists between people, between hands, between all parts is really quite special. I love the last lines. I love you beneath depths of a warm skin. That is so, I want to say Neruda-like. Was this for a Neruda contest, perhaps?
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's well done. Nice sonnet.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Pam, how about you?
Well, this is a beautifully written sonnet, and you can definitely feel the Neruda tone in it, as Laurent mentioned. I really like this all the way through, but it's that second stanza that I really enjoy. When you breathe, it's I that fills up with life. It's a moment when lips meet and hearts beat. And when intimate dances require no touch, that idea that it's that journey taken, the idea of a love and that connects two people, not only in their mind, their bodies, but their minds and their spirits as well. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I really like this piece, and I think she really aced the prompt. You know, it was Sonnet 17 by Neruda, and it definitely carries that tone and that vibe, and I think that it was well met, you know, with this piece. You know, I love this one. I love you in and out of life's journeys, the fiery waters, the monstrous exiles, to moments when your hands become my own and intimate dances require no touch. Like, that's beautiful. I mean, it's a love that transcends you know, the physical. And I think that makes it, like, you know, really wonderful. It's more than, you know, and that's what I like about it. So well done, Passions Promise. Great piece. Great piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Jean. Kate, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I really enjoyed reading it. It was a pleasure. First stanza, beautiful. But knitted through darkness, our love, the needle, single-stitched around corners of trust, lust, and bits of love through diversions of loss. I mean, that's just beautiful, isn't it? But for me, that last two lines, there is no you or I, but us in love. I love you beneath depths of a warm skin. That's just, what a beautiful ending to a really marvelous write. A joy to read, and really, I'm very pleased I got to read it. Thank you.
Excellent. Great comments, everybody. I got to head on with Jean. That third stanza, the second line in the fiery waters, the monstrous exiles, that's the transition, the turn from the I into the angle of singularity, the us, so to speak, which she finished off in the last stanza of the last line. There is no you or I, but us in love. I love you beneath the depths of warm skin. So that nice thought with the fiery waters, the monstrous exile. It's on that note of beyond the norms, beyond the rigors. We walk as a singularity.
Nice.
All right, Jean, we're coming back your way.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful stuff. Now, Pam, I have the next one for you, Missy. Okay, I'm going to put that up right now.
All right. Love in and out of sleep by Sydney Pierce, and it goes like this. Under floral quilts, we rest our eyes with our skin on display for the undergarment world to see. We lace our fingers and breathe in time. Perhaps we are only here to be loved by one another, here forever, in our painted lust and tired bodies. Maybe we are just together, and that is enough. You dip your gold fingers into the well of my ink-stained mouth and paint me like a portrait with each deliberately placed kiss. I wrap myself in you and cherish warmth, felt only in a marked embrace, as we sail our blanketed oceans gracefully with our sails pointed towards sleep. Our chests move in unison and we drift into one another's dreamscape to be pushed and held together again by the hands of the Sandman. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Kate, what do you think?
I think this is beautiful. It's just so many things to pick up, so many things to think about. Every stanza, as far as I'm concerned, is just very, very well put together. Under floral quilt, we rest our eyes with our skin on display for the undergarment world to see. We lace our fingers and breathe in time. That would be lovely, wouldn't it? I wrap myself in you and cherish warmth, felt only in a marked embrace, as we sail our blanketed oceans gracefully with our sails pointed towards sleep. So just, I think this is just a very beautiful piece of work. Beautifully done, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kate. All right, Jean, how about you?
Well, I thought this was a beautiful piece, and I believe this was from the Naruto contest as well. There's a lot of really good stanzas. I wrap myself in you and cherish warmth, felt only in a marked embrace, as we sail our blanketed oceans gracefully with our sails pointed towards sleep. You know, what a wonderful image that is. You know, two people in that space, you know. I really liked the piece very much. Great job. You know, fabulous, right? And nicely expressed. Just, yeah, awesome.
Laurent, how about you?
I swear I never get tired of enjoying all the various ways that people who are in love or write about love, find new and different ways to say things, although they may be similar, so there is some repetition, but still, it's the odd poet that can't find a phrase or a way of looking at things. The first stanza kind of epitomizes that. Under floral quilts, we rest our eyes with our skin on display for the undergarment world to see. That's a nice little twist. The stanza further on, I wrap myself in you and cherish warmth, felt only in a marked embrace, as we sail our blanketed oceans, and that's a very nice phrase, gracefully with our sails pointed towards sleep. I like the way she looks at love prior to sleep, laying in bed perhaps, and then what happens as you fall asleep. It's a mix of two worlds that succeeds quite well, I think, a loving piece.
Wonderfully said, Laurent. Thank you. Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this was a really nice one to be able to read. I thought it had a very, tender moment, and I liked how the sensuality is hid in between the lines. Like, to me, this is about that moment when you've just finished making love and you're snuggled up to each other and you can smell each other's scent and you can feel each other's heat and you're falling asleep together. And it's such a tender and romantic moment. Like even the line, and this might sound odd, but where she says, the first three lines, under floral quilts, we rest our eyes with our skin on display for the undergarments government world to see. That makes me think of the whole idea that the undergarments were slipped off underneath the sheets and are still under there with them. There to me is a kind of hidden and gentle seduction within these lines, but there's also that idea of how romantic it is, and not only romantic, but a feeling of security to be falling asleep that close to somebody. You know, so beautifully written and very well done.
This was, I'm going to take a word from what she was using here, graceful in tone, voice, and metaphor. It sings, and it allows the reader to walk within it to get what they see out of it for themselves. Nicely done, Sydney. All right, Jane.
Hello, Casey. Nice to see you in the room. Let's see. Okay, Laurent, I have the next one up for you. So here we go. And this is by Poetic Creations.
All right. Sorry, I'm going to refresh. All right, The New Dawn by Poetic Creations. Portal of Iris. Portal to the other side, pink lips, titanium mandible, light complexion, 0-1 connections, cracked facade, scars of truth, platinum locks, fiber optic thread for hair, carbon steel, heat-treated blue, creamy alabaster to set the mood, scent of a woman, strength of a machine. Nightmare dreams, forgotten memories, double helix, cold fusion drive. Cells get power from the sun's embrace. Nanoprocessors run best chilled. Though this bit is cold, her flesh is warm, like the earth and the moon. One side is lit, but the other side is dark. Balance is one of two sides. End poem.
Great reading, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get first.
All right. Well, I really like this. First of all, that is a cool picture that he wrote to. And I like how this is a sci-fi style story that has the duality of a character who is both a woman and an android or a cyborg type character. Scent of a woman, strength of a machine, nightmares, dreams, forgotten memories, double helix, cold fusion drive. It's got that whole feel of, to me, of that movie RoboCop, but it takes it on the idea of a woman who's trying to get in touch with her human side, and there's this battle within. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes. The picture is just perfect, isn't it? I mean, that's creepy, but wonderful. I do like an awful lot. I like science fiction a lot, so this really appeals to me. Platinum locks. So you're thinking, lovely blonde hair. Fiber optic threads for hair. So you're thinking, no, okay, we've got the other side of it. Carbon steel, heated, treated blue, creamy alabaster to set the mood, scent of a woman, strength of a machine. Yes, I think this is somebody who's dealing with feelings that perhaps, you know, they're not that comfortable with because they are aware that this is an android. This is a half human, half machine. And it seems to me that there's quite an awful lot of interest in this particular machine. But perhaps I'm wrong, but I just think it's beautifully written, because I do love all the cell powers from the sun's embrace, nanoprocessors run best chilled. Yes, I really enjoyed it. Beautifully written. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Jean, how about you?
Well, it's an interesting piece. I mean, that half type of human thought, and then the other half being somewhat of a, as the lady said, cyborg. You know, Terminator came to mind with me, one of the later movies where, half the face is ripped off and you just see all the mechanics inside. Well, God, I think they're happening in every one of them, I should say. what am I thinking? But he just had an interesting twist on it, and I wasn't sure where he was going to go with it. But, one side, when he says one side is lit but the other side is dark, balance is one of two sides. Kind of lost me with the last line, but, that one side struggles with the other in my head is where I went with that. And it was definitely intriguing. I wish it was a little longer, PC. Just a little longer. Give me a little more. A little more meat on those bones for me. Because I want to know where it's going. I thought it was intriguing. So definitely a nice job. So thank you.
Nicely said, Jean. Thank you. All right, Laurent, mm-hmm. You got to read it. How about you?
Oh, I really like this. We're right on the threshold of a new age, the age of the robot. If Elon Musk can get Optimus up and running as he's promised within just a year or two, this particular poem is very timely. I like the way he treats the beginning by looking very carefully at what's on the outside, but what is actually on the inside, the pink lips, titanium mandible, platinum locks, fiber optic threads for hair. I think it's the dream of every man, and perhaps of some women, to have literally a love slave. Now, that sounds abusive and that sounds a little far-fetched, but if you think about it, somebody who will never say no, someone who has the ability through her body to bring you to a height of ecstasy, and it's kind of an interface between man and machine that is tantalizing to think about, but I think it's also fraught. Either way, this poem succeeds wonderfully.
Thank you, Ron. Yeah, I get the fembot, the android angle, but there's another thought, the angle of uploading consciousness to a machine, because you hit on that thought, nightmare dreams and forgotten memories. So there could be an interface problem that comes with that. But on the whole, this could also walk with the thought of this individual has problem with women, and this is the viewpoint. Ease on one side, supreme hardness and darkness on the other side. The thought of a nightmare to forgotten dreams, the double helix, a thought of love, and a cold fusion drive of getting what they want. Cold flesh. Though the bit is cold, the sort of the drive itself, flesh is warm like the earth and the moon. So it could be the angle of, as you question the sort of femality as a whole, is he happy with it? All right, Jane, we're coming back your way.
Okay, and I'm coming back to you, if you would be so kind.
Oh, all right.
This one's by Jack Tomkovic.
Thanks, Stephen King. By Jack Tomkovic. Clowns did not scare me till Pennywise. Not Bozo back in the day, or Krusty chain smoking on the Simpsons. Not the frown clowns thickly painted on black velvet next to the poker playing dogs. But Pennywise pulling you kicking and screaming down into that sewer. Claws clutching, grabbing, down, down, stink water rumbling. Now that's the true stuff of nightmares and horrors. It's pretty clear. Old Penny voted for Trump and says Putin's fighting Nazis in Ukraine. End poem.
Wow.
All right. Pam, start with you, please.
All right. Well, first of all, as always, great read there, Rex. Honestly, I have seen, now, Pennywise, the movie It, is a freaky concept, but I think it's genius. Well done, all of the ones that they've done. You know, but I've seen some old-fashioned pictures with very freaky-looking clowns. You know, it's Jack has this great way of using straightforward language and imagery, bringing us in, capturing our attention, and then at the end, there's this, like, surprise, this flip of thoughts, and he led up to it so suddenly and then smacked us up against the side of the head with it. So clever, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Laurent, how about you?
Well, I have to echo what Pam just said, and I'll add, I love the timely and mostly accurate topical references at the end of the piece. Bravo.
Thank you, Laurent. And Kate, how about you?
Well, I agree with Jack. Clowns never bothered me until Pennywise. Whoa, that is one evil individual. Yes, I love the films, and I think this is, it's so funny. I found it very enjoyable. Not Bozo back in the day of crusty chain smoking on The Simpsons. Not the frown clown thickly painted on black velvet next to the poker-playing bulldogs. Perfect, perfect. And then Pennywise pulling you, kicking and screaming. Ugh. Ooh, nasty. So yes, and the end part, old Penny voted for Trump. Well, I can say what I like because I'm Scottish. I can say what I, because nobody's going to get me. But yeah, and says Putin's fighting Nazis in Ukraine. That's brilliant. That is just a perfect little punch in there when you don't expect it. So yes, I agree about Pennywise, and I agree about the last few lines as well. Beautifully written and most enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I think that Jack wandered through this nicely. You know, he starts out by mentioning Pennywise, but then he says, not Bozo or crusty chain smoking on The Simpsons. You know, and then he kind of wanders down just a little bit. He says, but Pennywise pulling you, kicking and screaming down into the sewer. Claws clutching, grabbing, down, down, stink water rumbling. Now that's the true stuff of nightmares, you know. And it is, you know, it is. A lot of people have an aversion to clowns to start with, you know. And then good old Stephen King kind of just blew that completely out of proportion. Now it's like everybody's like, oh, I don't think so. But it was really well done. And when it said, "Old Penny voted for Trump." It says Putin's fighting Nazis in Ukraine. Oh, my God. You know, only Jack would throw that in at the end and cracked me up. So, nice work, Jack. Maybe we should send Pennywise over there. Yeah, maybe he can fix it. Doubt it. But, you know, it would be more to pull down into the sewer. I'll behave now. Okay. I'm done, Rex. I'm
great
done. Drag
comments,
me out.
Everybody. Thank you very much. I did like to run in with the clown's thoughts all the way through. Pennywise, that was great. It, the original, I enjoyed that, especially when it came to the sewer scenes with the kids. And, yeah, you did get to see the thought of being pulled down into that nightmare realm. And it was quite the thought way back when. And the humor that rolls through this piece is stunning, and it bites hard. So, nicely done, Jack. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okie doke. Well, Weaver, I'm going to put this next one up for you, my friend. And I guess you would be so kind.
Of course, yes. I will be with you in just one shake of a lamb's tail. Beasts of Man. Beasts of Man. Okay. Do we blame the fly caught in the spider's web? Silly fly, you should have known. All too soon you will with his sickening allure, for trapping innocence within and playing on demure. Out in the wild parts of the world, a girl who knew no evil was eaten by a sea monster and left behind upheaval. Can you blame the monster who was born into this nature? Surely it was not his fault, though some claim this portraiture. No matter where you live on earth, it's likely you'll be next. These creatures are a part of life, yet often we're perplexed. Every single moment you live is a moment they could kill. So hold your gaze above the ground and watch for the poison pill. And if you decide to engage with the beasts of man, heed my words, take my advice, and behave and have a solid plan. And if you decide to engage with the beasts of man, be sure to come prepared or shorten your lifespan. End poem.
Great reading, Kate. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah. The analog to the spider who captures the fly and the monster who ate the girl who knew no evil is, of course, named in the last stanza, the beast of man. No matter where you live on earth, it's likely you'll be next. These creatures are a part of life. It often we're perplexed. The idea that that moment does not go by when the beast of man, someone, would kill you. It's nothing that you want to think about on a daily basis, but if you think about it, it's true. So it's always wise to keep a weather eye and not to trust too quickly, and definitely hold your gaze above the ground. I like the way this is rhymed and laid out. Nice job, Casey.
Thank you, Rob. Gene, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a really good piece. Clever, right? And you know, it's true. Only the strong survive, so always beware. You know, well expressed, and it was nice work. And I have to say I liked out in the wild parts of the world, a girl who knew no evil was eaten by a sea monster and left behind upheaval. Can you blame the monster who was born into this nature? Surely it was not his fault, though some claim his portraiture. You know, the rhyme was nicely done. The meter was nicely done. The thought was well expressed. So I think that she did a nice job with this one. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jean. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really liked this one. I have to agree with Lawrence and Phil that the rhyme and meter is definitely nicely done. I tend to stick to four-line rhymes, so whenever somebody does more than four lines in a stanza and maintains a consistent rhyme pattern, I'm always impressed with that. There's two thoughts that come to mind, like a couple different thoughts that come to my mind. First of all, it makes me think of the tale of, you know, the frog and the scorpion, and the scorpion stinging the frog, and they both drown, and says, you know, well, you should have known I'm a scorpion and I'm not going to change. You know, scorpions don't change, serpents don't change. I also kind of get the idea of the blame the victim mentality that is within our society. The, you know, you wouldn't have been raped if you hadn't been dressed like that, you know. And that, I'm not saying that's everybody, but that is a you know, a attitude within the culture of some. You know, but there's also this idea of you had, you know, of having that fair warning of realizing that that serpent is always going to be a serpent and they're always going to bite you. And I like how she goes from the sea monsters on to the beasts of man, the monster that humanity can be. So just a really wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Pam. And Kate, what about you?
Yes, very interesting. So basically, I see the, you know, the thought is, do you blame the fly for being silly enough to get caught in a web? Well, no. Can you blame the spider for eating his morning meal? No. This is going to happen. This is life. You fly in the wrong way and you're dead. But I can't really agree that every beast of a man is a beast. There are some wonderful men. So that you know, I can see the point. You've got to live your life on earth. It's likely you'll be next. These creatures are a part of life, yet often we're perplexed. Every single moment you live is a moment they could kill. I understand that that's the reasoning behind this one, but I can't agree on every aspect of it, unfortunately, because I think there's an awful lot of lovely men out there. I've met a few of them myself. But it's beautifully written, and as you say, it's a beautiful meter, beautiful rhymes. And, you know, we don't always agree with everybody, do we? So most of it I agree with. It was lovely.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. I like the nature and nurture angle in this. There are some veins of thought that if you're going to go out into the world, you should at least be self-aware and very aware of your surroundings before you step foot into them. Otherwise, what happens is generally stooped on your shoulders because you should have known better, so to speak. That's where the thought with the spider and the fly up top. There are some arenas you don't walk into. It's like, hey, there's a war going on, and if you go there despite our warnings and you get killed, you know what? That's a little bit on your head. The idea of being totally self-aware of what's going on around you at all times is a paramount thought to safety. A nice touch. All right, Jean, coming back to you.
Okay. We're going to run a couple audios and then get back into some more.
Oh, yeah.
So here we go. The first audio I'm going to put up, believe it or not, is by We Are All Gonzo. We know how much we love this, and we're getting to part four. Part four. Is everybody ready?
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go.
Sleepy crept carefully, evading the scattered shards, peeping your head around the corner, checking for lookouts or guards. Down the stairs with haste and stealth, as deftly as the seas move shells, she stopped abrupt in shock and awe.
No way, they're this stupid.
But indeed, a dragon was what she saw. Toes could not have tipped with a lesser click as her slick retreat and crafty feet worked like sweet arithmetic.
Hey, sleepy!
Back behind the stone-broken pillar, her stomach curdling, her next she'd be dinner.
I'm just messing with you.
This dragon sleeps and sleeps. It's so depressed and so boring.
Glittering light manifested in bright luminescent refracted, leaving Sleepy distracted.
Pull this pin, then run.
Pin slid and the shackle unclipped.
Running time.
Propelled by functioning quads and sheer terror, she jettisoned out of the immediate area. Round the corner, down the hall, past the three bears, who were perplexed by what they saw. The three bears poked their head out to spy a peek before smoke and fire charred each evenly. The dragon's patience never slackened, nor became complacent while the hallways blackened, continuing to chase the original game, becoming maddened with each failed flame. Sleepy hit a dead end, smacking at the brittle bricks when she turned around and found the dragon was closer than comfort would permit. With no other options left in her mind, she did the polite thing and apologized.
But I'm the one that set you free. Oh, please, please don't eat me.
The dragon scoffed and huffed, lifting itself up into the air, taking flight, crashing through the skylight and flying deep into the night. Sleepy was relieved, but realized there wasn't time since she would have to find Goldie and squeeze the life out of her just as demand payment for their crimes.
Okay, where the hell am I now?
The Goldie wrapped her luscious locks around Sleepy's throat and began to gloat.
I've been waiting a long time, you know.
Who knew hair was so efficient at stopping air from entering one's lungs and sapping strength from the knees? Sleepy fought and crawled and dragged and clawed and managed to get Goldie off her feet. As Goldie rose, she froze a sad pose as she saw what was laid bare of the three protective bears.
I'm done playing babysitter. You're gonna die!
With a quick maneuver, once again, Goldie laced her strands of hair around Sleepy's neck and hand.
You know, if you keep chewing on your hair, you're gonna get a furball.
The mirror's sarcasm was not appreciated, but the mirror's stare at the table was fixated. Sleepy turned and spotted three bowls, grabbing one, but finding it cold, the second lukewarm, no menacing harm, but the third, piping hot, was the just right one all along. Burning a layer of skin on over half of her palm, Sleepy removed Goldie's grin and her chin with the liquid napalm. Even as Goldie screamed, a tear never fell from her eye, for the liquid sealed up shut and she could no longer cry. Spastically, she thrashed and crashed along the shelves before unwittingly heading for a window. Mira unlocked the seventh-tier glass encasement and Goldie soared through, splattering on a garden embankment.
Why did you do that?
I told you, dear girl. I have what you want, and if you play along, you just might have it all.
Sleepy unlocked the door adjacent and headed out through the castle's basement, passing a case in her haste, removing a blade for just in case, unaware her entertainment for the mirror, though it was pleasure sadistically queer, had a deeper story than vengeance for her tragic fallen engagement.
So, evil stepmother, husband and other relative brutally murdered on your wedding day, coma for 5 years.
What?
Sleepy stopped in her tracks, taken aback by this final fact.
I've been asleep for 5 years? 5 years. Son of a...
Oh, that was wonderful, Gonzo. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Laurent, you want to kick us off?
Well, thank you for that, my friend. This is really a hell of a journey that we take with Gonzo, who reminds us with his production values how important sound can be to a production like this. I think his use of sound effects is simply marvelous. And I don't know what the reader can really do with a story like this, except hang on, enjoy the wonderful nonsense of this, the intertwining of all manner of Disney stories and fairy tales, and just enjoy it for exactly what it is. Don't try and make it any deeper than the author intended, because I think the author just intended to really weave us a fantasy farce, complete with a sound field that adds so much to the piece. I can't wait for the next one.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was great, and I, it amazes me how much he puts into the stories. I can't imagine what it takes to pull in all these different nursery rhymes and kind of pull them together and create this, I don't want it to sound like I don't like it, but peculiarly dark stories. Goldilocks, the voice of Goldilocks always makes me chuckle when I hear it on here. And you got, Sleeping Beauty, and you got this dragon floating around now, and you got the mirror, and I don't know, it just amazes me how he's holding all these different characters from elsewhere and just created this story and world of his own. And, I have to say, I'm impressed with the amount of time he must spend to do this. And what a production he puts together. It's wonderful.
Excellent. Thank you, Jean. Kate, how about you?
Yes, I agree. There is so much work involved in this. I haven't actually heard the other parts of this, I'm afraid. But this told me everything, didn't it? It was just really, really good. I love that She hit her head on the brittle bricks when she turned around and found the dragon was closer than comfort would permit. With no other options left in her mind, she did the polite thing and apologized. Which you would do, wouldn't you? Sleepy, but I'm the one that set you free. Please, please don't eat me. Then the dragon decided not to and just went through the skylight and off. So yes, it was fascinating and so cleverly put together. The voices are just great. Music behind and everything. Yes, beautiful production. Well done, Gonzo. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Kate. Pam, how about you?
This was wonderfully entertaining and wicked fun. I just love how you get this twisted humor. You really get a feeling for how truly wicked these characters are. I like also they brought in the dragon where was this part? Goldie's wrapped her luscious locks around Sleepy's throat and began to gloat. I've been waiting a long time, you know. There's also this whole feeling, you know, like when Sleepy is like, you know, I was the one who saved you, and, you know, that talking to the mirror. And this whole idea of you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And, you know, just great fun to listen to, entertaining, and very well done.
Thank you, everybody. This is like a whack-a-mole. Once you think you've got one angle covered, he drops in something else and takes you off into another direction. I'd like to see all of these put into cartoon form in a true fractured fairy tale motif. This would meet the bill. Well done, Gonzo. All right, Jane.
Okie dokie. Well, I guess it's back to me. I got it. Okay, this next piece I'm going to put up is by Diane D. And this also has an audio. We are going to. Maybe it's going to wait. What the hell did I do? Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to do the next one. I'm going to come back to Diane in a minute. So, okay, I'm going to put up this piece by Mr. M. I keep wanting to say with the munchy mouse, but sorry, kindergarten kicks in. Okay, here we go.
This poem was inspired by the poem titled Can't Unsee Your Eyes by the poet No Middle Name. This is my recital of Undone. Moonbeams illuminate scars of severance. Inkwells can never sate this void of reverence. Insatiable the ravens call from their demeaning perch, dining upon every flaw their razor beaks can smirch. Many of my desperate pleas were squelched for your sake, trying so hard to appease a dream I could not wake. Skeletal hopes now adorn the page that meets the pen. Crimson ink reflects the scorn that is seeping once again. Your love made its wicked mark as a brand upon my mind, leaving me wounded in the dark with a soul that long resigned. This lone corpse you cannot save merely wishes to depart. Yet I can't escape the frigid grave you left within my heart.
Wonderful read, Mr. M. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Kate, why don't we start with you, please?
Whoa, ho, ho. What a beautiful read. Wow. It was very, very good. And I think some of the stanzas in here are just really, really good. Many of my desperate pleas were squelched for your sake, trying so hard to appease a dream I could not wake. So that's, you know, that's somebody who's being quiet, not saying what he thinks, even though the person that he cares about is making his life a little bit miserable. So say nothing, just for the sake of peace. But still, he's hurt and he's wounded. And there's not a lot he can do about it, unfortunately, because it's a fait accompli. He has accepted it for what it is. But love made its wicked mark as a brand upon my mind, leaving me wounded and dark with a soul that long resigned. So, yes, very well written, a story about somebody who has had a difficult relationship, but is still with that relationship because that's how much he cared, I think. But I really enjoyed it. Very well written. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Pam, how about you?
First of all, it was a wonderful SoundCloud and read. I thought this had, as always, great rhyme and flow. I like how the general idea of the poem, to me, is that feeling of, you know, just feeling abandoned, feeling like you gave all to somebody and they pushed you into that void. I really like A Dream I Could Not Wake, Skeletal Hopes Now Adorn the Pages That Meets the Pen. But, you know, I like that we pour our pain out into our writing, into our poetry. And the lone corpse you just cannot save merely wishes to depart. Yet I can't escape the frigid grave you left within my heart. I like that he put that as a metaphorical grave that grows within. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Nobody could write better dark than this gentleman. And few people can match his skills at delivering it. The scars of severance really resonates with me. Too often, a person who whose love, in quotation marks, and makes their wicked mark as a brand upon my mind. People are very, very strange. They say they love you, but their actions leave scars, break hearts. And as he says in the last line, "Yet I can't escape the frigid grave you left within my heart," because, you know, the inkwells can never sate this void of reverence, no matter what, how much he writes, no matter what he writes, perhaps. It's not going to help him to realize any happiness. And the metaphorical ravens that dine upon every flaw, an invisible flock that's in our mind, always feeding on our worst fears, accelerating them. It's a terrific piece, but that's not surprising for this poet. Love it.
Thank you, Rob. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought that this was an incredible write. You know, as always, Robert does have a wonderful way with dark pieces. I thought it was a dark and painful piece, and his emotions are always very well expressed. And I have to say, I picked up that last stanza. "Your love made its wicked mark as a brand upon my mind, leaving me wounded in the dark with a soul that long resigned. This lone corpse you cannot save, but it will depart. Yet I can't escape the frigid grave you left within my heart." Hey, what a fabulous stanza, whether it's the beginning or the end. I mean, it's just very well said. And, you know, I think that Robert did an excellent job with this. Makes me want to go read No Middle Names piece right now. But I'll have to do that another time. So great work. Yeah. Awful.
Great comment, Debbie. Yeah, it was hard-edged, personal, and filled with beautiful richness, a brutal richness. Oh, sorry. And that second stanza had me thinking of "Caveat emptor, buyer beware. You give up, you give in, and you're left empty." Nicely done, Mr. M.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right, Jean. We're coming to background to you once more.
I just want to say that I'm a little crazy because I saw Diane D and automatically I thought she did a SoundCloud and she did not. That's why I was kind of like, hasn't it? So
gotcha.
Yeah, she sure did. I'm going to do a couple more. I'm going to do one more SoundCloud and then I'm going to get back into everyone on the line and bouncing in and out of that. So we should be in good shape after this. The next piece I have up is going to be by Titus Llewellyn. And let me get that one going. So here we go.
Cut from the same cloth, a tapestry tale, whether framed from an eyelet of my home, the canopy folded back, dare it be engraved, maple rather than the redwood I have saved, from memory how worn-up brown does run. I have crocheted a tale of round robins here, the folded laced-up curtains still withdrawn, are kept within a beveled-edged box where, pine-cone scent, I'm awed to smell the dawn. A sip of butterscotch for Anne, my dear Emily, curled up in bed. I hope her dreams come true. The gathering of silk and arm outside bestrew the delicate tweed some of us need, tellingly. My only wish to wrap up plaid around us all, to step outside, trade the moulded footprints. A fluttering of leaves I find just ample hints of rust, so rarely does a bronze knocker call. From where I stand, splintered groups of trees, I would imagine knitted leaves together, so far full circle, autumn kindly it does unduly mar, a crisp exskeletal layer of what is manganese, pewter mugs which did pour some ruby wine, nothing worth celebrating but mustard seeds, nothing much to add to keep myself this fine. Fine as can be, I do have my tiny prayer beads. A pinch of nutmeg I gather was given a snuff to ease the airways, to keep covered the wheat flails of wood we have. I think we've enough to keep us warm, a reed before we do retreat.
Great read, Titus. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is really appreciated. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
This is really beautiful. It has a lovely meter to it. I like that he brings us into the mind of, I believe, Charlotte Bronte telling the tale of her and her sisters. I like how this takes us back in time, and not just, you know, century-wise, but the idea of somebody's personal history, their childhood, and time spent, you know, in with siblings. Wonderful use of colors and imagery, the different kinds of wood. I mean, even like a sip of butterscotch for Anne, my dear Emily, curled up in bed. I hope her dreams come true. A gathering of silk and arm outside bestrew. Douglet tweed, some of us need tellingly. You can taste the butterscotch. You can feel the tweed. This is really one of those right. Oh, and a pinch of nutmeg. I can just imagine the scent of the nutmeg, and so it just really encapsulates and excites all the senses as you read this tale. So very well done.
Well said, Anne. Thank you. And Kate, how about you?
Yes, I agree with everything you said. I like the pictures of the sisters. They're so cute, the Bronte sisters. Yes, the pinch of nutmeg I thought was a beautiful touch. Can you imagine actually sniffing it, though? Must have been very therapeutic, Mike. Pewter mugs, which did some... pour some ruby wine. Nothing worth celebrating, but mustard seeds. Nothing much to add to keep myself this fine. Fine as can be, do I have my tiny prayer beads. Yes, this is a glimpse into a life that's completely alien to us because it's, you know, it's completely different in every way. They have none of the things that we have to play with. They have their music. I suppose they have the piano or and their writing, and obviously if they're not feeling well, they don't have an awful lot they can do except something hot to drink. But yes, I think it's beautifully written, and as I say, it gives a wonderful little glimpse into what's going on. So yes, I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Kate. Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was nicely penned. Titus, you know, has a way with writing. So, you know, most all of his pieces are well done. I thought it was a great use of the word bank. I did happen to notice there was a word bank. It's funny because it's all colors, crayon colors. But he took them and he used them as he needed. The pinch of nutmeg, I gather, was given as snuff to ease the airways, to keep covered the weak flails of wood we have. I think we've enough to keep us warm. Greed before we do retreat. Great, I thought it was a great imagery and a tale well told. Clever, clever work, Titus. Thanks for sharing.
Okay. And LaRock, how about you?
Yeah, this is such a quiet poem. It deals with small things, small goings on, giving us visions of an outside world, almost as if it was through a telescope, through a looking glass. I mean, I guess the Bronte sisters were isolated, and their world were small, but their writings were large. It's kind of ironic that within that, each of them was given to writing and did write to some eventual success, some great success, actually. And yet, quiet for all of that. And I think it's brilliantly done, as always, by Titus. I'm not going to attempt to quote his wonderful delivery.
Excellent. Thank you, Ron, and everybody. Great comment. This kind of comes as almost an introduction to who they were, and it's kind of like the lived and tradition that which they shared over the years with their voices, their writing. So there's a note to a different time, that which no one alive today could understand, let alone think of, I could survive that. Yes, right. That's not happening, considering you can't survive now. But the idea of actually relying on the notes of that which comes from understanding nature itself, nutmeg, the sort of mustard seeds, manganese, there's quite the note to that which has been kind of lost and almost taught out of it. Those little tidbits of things that we used to know, we no longer know. All right, Jean, you're talking about the TV.
Okay. Well, good to be back. Pam, I have the next piece up for you, if you don't mind.
Okay,
you're going to stand in for the audio.
All right. I Killed Who by Diane D, and it goes like this. Jolted out a crimson dream state, mental muddle, asleep or awake, shadowy my head, my room, WTF, full gear, officers in a tight semicircle, the world shrunk to the size of my bed. I'm led away in gunmetal handcuffs, TV channels, mass blasting my crime, like 9/11, lady dies, car wreck, whole continent wild, arch dismay, pitless masses screaming lynch, milk fuzzy reality noosing my neck, hit me like a mallet, murder in the first, grappling like a mid-April rain pour. The world wept in all alike macabre, guilty, how, like it even mattered. Solitary confinement protecting me. An orange jumped, begged, sadism, judge, jury, and executioner collude. Sentencing cell blocked my new fate, death penalty by fatal injection. I lifted my leaded head at the judge. He looked up, a murk condemnation. Agape, I hear. You, sir, you killed God. I woke from a cotton sheet dream, rolled over, and slumbered in La La Land. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, why don't you kick us off, please?
Such a well-done treatise, as it were, on a nightmare. You know, that moment when all the details are all really vivid, and we can remember it enough to write about it, and nothing makes any kind of sense, and we're simply barreling down railroad tracks. On a train, we can't stop. We can't get off. One event leads to another, until finally we wake up and sigh and go back to sleep. I really enjoyed the way he did this. His use of details, Lady Di, TV channels, solitary confinement, the orange jumpsuit, all these things that he weaves into the piece make this very, very enjoyable. I really liked it.
Thank you, Laurent. Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, I was thinking this is very creative and very well written. I think there was a lot of really good imagery throughout. Doled out crimson dream state, mental muddle, asleep or awake, shadowy, my head, my room, WTF, full gear officers in a tight semicircle, the world shrunk to a size of my bed. You can kind of like envision that, even though the mental muddle and stuff really doesn't have a visual, you can kind of still pull this whole scene together. And I think that there's a series of scenes that really makes this happen. But what a different ending to it all, you know. You, sir, you killed God. Wow. You know, I'd have woke up in a panic. I would have been like, whoa. But just a really well-written piece. So great job, Diane, and thanks for sharing, for sure.
Thank you, Gene. And Kate, how about you?
Yes, this is the beautiful depiction of a nightmare. I'm really into dreams and what they mean, because I know that that's the way your mind files things away, allows you to understand. But because I don't sleep much, I get awful nightmares, terrible nightmares. But the bottom line, every time I wake up, the end of my nightmare is always, I've lost my handbag. The stupidest thing. And I don't know why, but I keep losing my handbag. I can understand this about you killed God. You, sir, you killed God. I awoke from a cotton sheet dream, rolled over and slumbered in La La Land. So yes, a horrible, horrible nightmare. All the different things that were happening. An orange jumpsuit? I mean, really orange? Judge, jury, executioner, collude, sentencing cell blocked by my new fate. Death penalty by fetal injection. Awful. Nice that you can wake up. That's the one thing about nightmares. You can wake up. So yes, beautifully written. I found it quite scary. Especially the orange jumpsuit, but beautifully written, and I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this was really clever. I like that she had the waking up from the nightmare twist at the end, and the imagery in here, like milk fuzzy reality noosing my neck, hit me like a mallet, murder in the first grappling. I really appreciated those lines. But this is well done all the way through. And what I like is part of the nightmare isn't just the getting arrested. The heart of the nightmare to me is Pitless Masses screaming lynch. The idea of that mob mentality that has decided ahead of time that somebody is guilty and is demanding blood. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. I think there's a moral to this story. The idea being you've killed God at the back end of this is that notion of walking too far outside the lines of that which was given oh so many eons ago as a thought to a hierarchy, and thinking ourselves so ease of thought that, yeah, we can kill off God and not worry about a thing, yet somebody's got to pay for it in the end, don't they? All right, Gene, back to you.
I just want to say, if they tell me I'm going to die by lethal injection, and then they tell me that I killed God, I want to know, where does that really leave me? You know, that's like a lot of darkness in my world. Anyway.
That
makes you think twice.
Well, it goes to the metaphorical angle of, yes, this is your fault, this is your fault, this is your fault. The idea of killing God for not believing is, I think, the underlying theme, the moral. Hey, you know what? You might want to wake up. Look what's going on around you. This shit ain't going away.
Yeah. Crazy. That is crazy. But anyhow, before I put I need you to read the next piece for me, but I don't have a piece on the board for you. Is that right?
I believe you do.
I do not see it, but I'm going to put this piece up for you to read. It's short, and then you can go and grab us one. That would be great. Okay?
All right.
Thank you.
Be the writer's C?
Yes, sir. Yes, Bob.
Speed dating. Speed dating. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm trying to get closer to that lady by the door. 5, 6, 7, 8. I need to hurry before it gets too late. 9, 10, 11, 12. I need to speak to her before they ring the bell. Making eye contact from across the room. 2 more dates, and I will talk to her soon. End poem.
Great, Laurent. Thank you very much. Pam, I'd like to start with you.
All right. Well, this is a fun and clever brevity. Lawrence, that was a great read. I like how the counting gave it a sing-song type quality and a, almost like a Mother Goose nursery rhyme feel. I've never done speed dating, but I could imagine if you saw that one person that you really wanted to get to, this poem captures that idea perfectly. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes. What a fun poem. Yes. It was. You can't see it, can't you? You can see him glancing up and thinking, hello, that's a nice lady. And then she's like 5 or 6 people away. And he's trying very hard to speak to the people he's got to speak to and appear to be interested, but all he wants to do is get closer to this lady. 9, 10, 11, 12. I need to speak to her before they ring the bell. So hopefully he got there before the end of the speed dating time and he got to speak to her. We need to know this. Somebody needs to tell us how it ended. But very funny. We needed
absolutely.
13, 14, 15, 16, and then we would have
been Jean, how about you?
I thought it was clever and well done. I mean, it was, it had nice bounce to it when Milan was reading it. You know, it was kind of reminded me of a nursery rhyme kind of feel. And I liked it, the way he expressed that speed dating, you know, just trying to get to that person that you really think you want to meet, and, you know, just working your way around as quick as you can, but not quick enough because you're on their timeline. So I thought it was clever. Well done.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, you got to read that. How about you?
Yeah, it was indeed a very clever look at speed dating. You could almost see him looking sideways as he gets closer and closer and closer. He presented it very creatively. I like the 1, 2, 3, 4. Bum-ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. It establishes a nice rhythm and really makes it a poem worth remembering.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's very humorous, and it does bite on that note for speed dating. But it comes from a Beatles song off of the Yellow Submarine, All Together Now. The sort of the basic angle to the presentation. 1, 2, 3, 4. Can I have a little more? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I love you. But he's rolled it into this sort of speed dating, which is done as a clever angle because you get, 2 minutes on each before each bell rings, and then you move on to the next one. And that's,
boy, if you see the slightest musical innuendo, you are right there to grab it. Bravo.
I knew that rhythm right up front. It sang in my head. I know that. I thought it was well played, too. It was a great take on that idea of speed dating. I'm coming back to you, Jean.
Okay. Okay.
First one.
I'm coming to you, Rex. So here we go.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Ground down moonbeams and sunlight. I wear the night in shades of last moments, dipped in calligraphy. Iron galls, velvet flame, dripping crossed tempera flesh, where fingers ran from themselves. As moon glows patois in barred owl laughter, and as the dawn of those kiwi pinwheel pendulums burn in our copper draft, that immolation etching Enochian symbols on the ribs of our souls and tears on the cheeks of gods and punks.
Beautiful job, Rex. Okay, Weaver, do you want to start us off on this one?
Oh, yes, please. I read this one earlier as well. I just thought it was really, really good. I like the way you use these words. I wear the night in shades of last moment. That's just incredible. I wear the night in shades of last moments. Iron gold's velvet flame dripping across tempura flesh. Just yet, another one, another little beauty. Where fingers ran from, and then I had to scroll the themselves till I got to the end and realized what that was. As Mingo's patois screamed in barred owl's laughter. Really, 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 really enjoyable. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it, Rex. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Kate.
And Pam, how about you?
Oh, I thought, you know, well, as always, Rex's poetry is stunning. It's beautiful. I love how you play with formatting and allow the shaping to become part of the poem. Last moments dipped in calligraphy really make me think about how, you know, you write everything down. And I like that you brought your barn owl into this. That was really cool. Where fingers ran from themselves as moon glow patois and barred owl laughter, and as the dawn of those kiwi pinwheel pendulums burn in our copper drought. There's just this beautiful sense of trying to get back in touch with oneself. I like the emanation symbols, the magic that comes from, you know, to me that's like the magic that comes from expressing oneself within poetry. So beautifully written, Rex, and very well done.
Thank you.
And Laurent, how about you?
Always a pleasure to comment on Rex's stuff. I was so drawn by the dawn of those kiwi pinwheel pendulums burning our copper draught, that immolation etching Enochian symbols on the ribs of our souls and tears upon the cheeks of gods. I must ask if you have, might not have been a contemporary of E.E. Cummings, as well as your master's style and your ability to marry words of apparent disparate meaning and relate them successfully to each other is really wonderfully bewildering. Wonderful, really an excellent.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Well, Rex, I think this was an excellent piece, and I think that you really, it was a great take on E.E. Cummings. Just nicely done. The form, to me, is very much, you know, on the money. But I love this. I wear the night in shades of last moments, dipped in calligraphy. Iron galls, velvet flame, dripping crust, tempura flesh. You know, right there, I'm going to stop right there and be like, yeah, that works. Beautiful job. Beautiful job. Great wording. Excuse me, throughout and just very much enjoyed it. So,
thank you very much, everyone. And where would you like to go next?
I don't know. I have one here for Weaver of Dreams. I think I'll go there.
Uh-huh.
So here we go. Okay, Miss Weaver. Weaver Lady. Let me find it. Wait, I gotta find it.
I apologize in advance.
This is everything.
Today I saw you. Felt your gaze electric and hot. What is this effect you always have on me? There is heat, a hunger, a power hard to ignore. I need you. I'm alive with the neon high, spiking. My body feels you, bends, moves, opens to your touch. This sensation, so intense, draws me into your orbit. There is no escape, not even if I wanted to. I'm slick with my need for you, for your body. I long to feel your skin on mine. You say we have to talk. I reply that a lady shouldn't talk with her mouth full. That makes you smile. Then you remember and frown as you move one step away from me. With that step, we are now worlds apart. Which is when I know playtime is over. Marriage has made you grow up.
Great read, nice. Kate. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is really appreciated. All right, Laurent, what do you think of this?
Well, it's a wonderful piece. There is an intensity to it that is really inescapable. The lines, my body feels you, bends, moves, opens your touch. This sensation, so intense, draws me into your orbit. There is no escape, not even if I wanted to. I'm slick with my need for you, for your body. And as you attempt to joke, and he frowns and moves one step back, and you say with that step, we are now worlds apart. It's almost as if no longer being a child, but being married, the suggestion of that kind of naughtiness, it does not bring the same response it might have in earlier years, and that's a real shame. I noticed briefly that one of the commentators said, grumpy old men, saying, you know, where's all that fire that you laid on me that allowed me to totally capitulate and just completely open myself to you? Where is it now? Your marriage has made you grow up, sadly. Great piece.
Well said, Laurent. Thank you. And Jean, how about you?
Oh, my, my. We're halfway through. I was like, oh, my God, I better read ahead. Really well done, Kate. Very, very nicely put. You know, the ending was kind of like a bum deal, you know, but it happens sometimes, you know. The question is, was two people in the poem married, or was he married somewhere else? So that was my question, but doesn't require an answer. I think that you did a great job, and I thought it was a tale well told. You know, hot, 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 and then, you know, it kind of tapered off into this kind of a sad space. But it was really a great job. So, well done.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is very well done. I have to agree with Jean that you did a wonderful job of tapering it off. You know, like you brought us from one feeling to the next in almost this very smooth move. And there's a strong emotional impact within that end line. But, you know, the sensuality within the top line, especially as it, you know, shows the body's reaction to a lover's touch. My body feels you bend, moves, opens to your touch, a sensation so intense draws me into your orbit. I really like those lines, Kate. Beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you.
Well said, everybody. All right, Kate, Your language just has me, today I saw you, has me thinking of a workplace romance, something that bites hard. You see each other off and off. You got those little glancing looks across the room, so to speak. And also that joke you threw in here in the middle on the, near the bottom end was really funny. And it tells of the personal nature and the draw that that was there. You say we have to talk. I replied that a lady shouldn't talk with her mouth full. A deliberate and telling joke which hits on the closeness of the two. But the back end, when the angle of playtime is over, marriage, but Gene hit on that, but he's married. And he knows his, where his responsibilities lie and what he's got to do. So the back end of this is sad because the woman gets left. Well, either way, it would have worked out that way, whether it was the wife or the lover. But he's going back to the wife and leaving the lover, so to speak.
Correct. Exactly. That is exactly that. She is being left. Poor girl.
Nice find there.
Yes, you were both correct. That's exactly what it is. Fun and laughter, and then reality strikes. But yes, I enjoyed writing it. I quite like being.
Oh, well, it was a hot piece too, and well worded without being intricate.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
You're very welcome. All right, Jane.
Okay. We need a little overtime tonight. Just a little, everybody. Just a little. Because I got three we got to do. Three we got to do. So, okay, I'm going to put the piece up by Poetic Picasso next. And I'm going to put up for that. So, here we go.
I am but one civilized man living amongst the world of hypocrites and self-righteous men of God, presumed to be guilty by my critics simply due to my supposed immorality. I am indeed eccentric, but that is not a transgression nor a crime committed. I must bear the weight of my indiscretions as a man must bear his burden. On the account of my actions, I stood before the men deemed to condemn me. I was once a prisoner scorned, and my fellow peers in fervent salads had threw me into the arena of lions. Secluded to a terrible prison, I was only a wretched number, not a glorious name. Thus, I am an exile cast off to the pollution dregs of society and ostracized by the gentry. I have nothing except my memories of grandeur I have cherished, with a haunting passion. My brilliance and art for the world, I have nothing else to present. To them, I am no longer an artist but a sinner. I wrote life when I did not know life. Now that I know life, I have nothing more to write. Each man kills a thing he loves. He kills even his soul. Eventually, he begs for a pardon that never comes or remains a prisoner of life. The war vapor and I are doomed to the death. Regrettably, one of us must go. And reading jail by reading town, there is a pit of shame. A shame of the chains I bore.
Great read, Frank. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is truly appreciated. And Kate, why don't we start with you, please?
Okay. Right, so here we have this poor man who hasn't done anything except just be himself, which, let's face it, society does not like people who are different. I mean, children in the playground are feral when it comes to somebody who's different, and it doesn't change as we get older, I don't think. So you must bear the weight of my indiscretions as a man must bear his burden. on the account of my actions, I stood before the men deemed to condemn me. And, you know, they have no right to condemn him because they don't know what he's about. But I thought it was very powerful, very interesting, and very well written. So thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Pam, how about you? Pam?
Sorry, I muted myself. Okay. Yeah, a wonderful write. I always enjoy Frank's Oscar Wilde pieces, and I like how he takes us into the mind, into the voice of Oscar Wilde, and how, you know, his lifestyle conflicted with the so-called Victorian lifestyle. So even though other people sin, or, you know, and I put sin in quotation marks, just as much as him, but they kept it hidden. It was part of the society, part of the culture. There were certain things you hid, certain things you didn't talk about. And he had that type of personality where he fully embraced himself. He fully embraced his life. And I like that he touches on, eventually he begs for a pardon that never comes or remains a prisoner of life. That idea that, you know, just killing awful emotionally. I also really like, thus I'm an exile cast off to Persian dregs of society and ostracized by the gentry. You know, the idea that the upper class society would not accept him, so he went to where he knew he would be accepted. So just excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
This is great to hear this thing again. It's a wonderful Oscar Wilde pastiche. When he writes, "My brilliance and art for the world, I have nothing else to present. To them, I am no longer an artist, but a sinner. I wrote life when I did not know life. Now that I know life, I have nothing more to write. Each man kills the thing he loves. He kills even his soul. Eventually, he begs for pardon that never comes, remains a prisoner of life." He writes so well, like Oscar Wilde. It's another great one in the series of Oscar Wilde writes.
Thank you, Ron. Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I think that this was a wonderful piece, clever and well composed. And, you know, when I looked at it, I went, yeah, society can surely chain us all down. And if you look at it from that perspective, it just kind of fits right in for me. You know, our peers and everyone, like, you know, they can make us so, what's the way I want to say it? They can just hold us back and hold us down and really mess with us, you know? It's a terrible, terrible thing, actually. But it's truth. It is truth. They you know, convince us that we are what we are or what they think we are, and it can really just screw things up. I'm going to leave it at that because I don't want to get all twisted up. But great job, Frank, and very well delivered.
Absolutely. I think the bite in this is the upper end of his realm where he walked and strode. Everybody knew. They were just insulted that he was flaunted to the point that it would become public, and they were shitting in their pants because, well, they wanted him to keep his own counsel. He did just that, or he could have buried half the elite in London as it was, because they were all indulging in what was termed as criminal activity back then when it came to their predilections, their foibles, their little games. So they should be thankful he kept his tongue.
How delicately you put it.
Well, Les, I'm going to let you know that Weaver dropped. So.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where you know I had it.
All right. I think we got and time for one more, right?
Yeah, but I want to do two more. Do you mind? Anybody mind?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Pam, don't you drop. I'll beat you up. I'll come to Wisconsin and brave the snow just so I can do it. You heard that, right? I said that on air. Okay, Laurent, I have one for you to read. Oh, my God.
This is called Thread Unravels. The fear of losing her stands like a monolith against this dark sky. Huge, impenetrable, looming, its black surface eats the light. It has no reflection, offers no direction, dominates my universe. Yet she rips at the fabric of my being, busy fingers plucking and tearing at my skein of existence, warping words to fit assumptions, tainted with the peril provided by pride and judgment. Pulled too hard, the whole ball tumbles down dark hills until the thread unravels and only the end is left. End.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. Dale, what you got?
I really like this one all the way through. I like the consistency in the metaphors. I know I've said this before, but because my grandmother, my aunts, and my mother were all so much into knitting, crocheting, and sewing, there's just, to me, I really always enjoy a poem that uses the creative process of sewing a metaphor and imagery within it. And I really like this all the way through, but especially yet she rips the fabric of my being, busy fingers plucking and tearing on my skein of existence, warping words to fit assumptions tainted with the peril provided by pride and judgment. It's a wonderful write on how the destruction of the spirit by judgment and by pride. And the way that, and I like also, until the thread unravels, only the end is left. But that ending really makes me think of that that thread of the fates that gets snipped. And you can just feel that snip even though it's never mentioned. You know, so just an excellent write and very well done, Laurent.
Thank you, Pam.
And Jean, how about you?
Well, Laurent, I think it was very nicely penned, clever and very well expressed. I loved the metaphor throughout. I think it was just very well worded and very well thought out. Great piece.
Thank you.
Mm. Well, I got to go back to 1968 because of what you've used in here. 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Monolith.
The monolith against the stark sky. The black surface eats the light. No reflection, offers no direction, dominates my universe. There is such a heavy note of lost in that moment, fear of the unknown and what comes out on the other end, which is where you went with the rest of this, with the angle of pulling thread. So using that tableau with the huge stark monolith as that motif was perfect.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, dope.
All right, Jane.
Weaver's crazy. Kate, you're out of your mind. I love it. She just puts in the room, the patron saint of Mouthy Broads is not with me tonight. Oh, my God. Okay, I like it. Sorry, I got distracted. Okay, Pam, the very last one for the evening. This
okie dokie. All right, this is Dark Water Ripples, and it goes like this. Dark water ripples, a burst of bubbles rushing to catch summer's breath. Nylon lines casted in a shimmer of sunsets, butterfly kisses, cobalt and coral touching the imagination and the soul's response. A flourish of fins lifting like seraphim wings to conquer still depths within the tangle. Languid notes are drifting far to tropical lands and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, why don't we start with you?
Of course. Pam, I told you earlier, I thought this was just incredible. You know, I still say, why didn't you put this on the show? But it's okay. I, you know, there's not a stanza in this that I don't like. You know, Cobalt and Carl touching the imagination in the soul's response. A flourish of fins, lifting like seraphim wings, to conquer still depths. Just a beautiful piece. And you really, the prompt is like nothing compared to the write. I just think it's beautiful. Really do. So excellent write. And I'm glad you got something from those crazy prompts. They weren't crazy. But you know what I mean. I love the fluidity of the image. That was what I said.
I love it so much.
And the imagery.
Mm-hmm. And Laurent, how about you?
The image reminds me of the fish in Fantasia in one of the set pieces they have there. It's a beautiful image. And the first stanza is its equal. Dark water ripples, a burst of bubbles rushing to catch summer's breath. Beautifully written. The cobalt and coral touching the imagination and the soul's response is also beautiful. And when you want to, you can write some of the most beautiful lines. I've read in my time here at AP, your full undiscovered depths.
Thank you, Lauren.
I forget what that fish is called, but they are gorgeous in their representation. And your whole piece walks on fluidity. The water ripples, the bubbles, even summer's breath hits on the note of fluidity, just like the butterfly kisses. The soul's response is a note to how one sees and reflects on nature as itself. The flourish of fins, the seraphim wing, everything walks on that natural note to an environment they are familiar with and live within. And that summer's breath kind of hits on that note of, life renews. I will have a little bit more to eat. And a freshness comes with the note to summer's warmth.
Thank you very much, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Jane.
What a great night of poetry. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of good pieces coming from different places of thought, and I loved it. Very much enjoyed. We had plenty. We had two carryovers, Rex. Not bad.
Not bad
at all. Yeah, and I want to thank everyone who put a piece in. And yes, we have S. Sharp. So forgive me, S. Sharp and Truth Chills. I have them up for next Friday, so hopefully, you'll understand. It's a busy night. None of us ever like to rush through anything, so it just, nothing personal. Anyway, I think that's about it for tonight. Love everybody. I appreciate everybody. What a great group we had tonight on the phones. And Rex, thank you for co-hosting with me as always. Pam and Laurent and Weaver, I appreciate you guys calling in and hanging with us all night long. It makes it fun. So on that note, I have no more to say. Oh, wait, we have Aphasiana at 12:30. Not that anybody can hear me now. but parts in or parts ain't. 12:30 tonight, and if you can, join in and visit. So that being said, thanks, everybody, and have a great night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys. Thank you.